Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Welcome to Democratic Perspective, and happy 4th of July. We want to continue our discussion with Chad Campbell. Chad Campbell is the minority leader of the House in Arizona. He's a distinguished legislator. He's been a leader for a long time. His colleagues think extraordinarily highly of him. And he's one of the leaders in discussing something that we talked about the week before last, which is privatization. And we wanted to start out by asking Chad, the Republicans seem to think the solution to everything is privatization. How has privatization of the prisons gone, for example?
It's gone horribly, and this is one of the most important issues for me that I've been working on down here. You know, and when we saw last year, during the summer last year with the prison break in Kingman, we saw what was going on within one of these private prisons. Unfortunately, it was too late, and those people escaped. You know, people were killed as a result of that. But the breakdown within that private prison system was astonishing. What we learned, what had been going on for years, and the lack of oversight that had been taking place from the Department of Corrections with that facility was just unacceptable. So we're fast-forwarding now to a year, basically, ahead. And there's been some changes. Some things have gotten a little bit better at some of these private prisons. But the problem is you can't fix these systems. Anytime you privatize a commodity such as a prison, you're opening yourself up to some big risks, especially around public safety. And what we need to be doing is making sure two things. We need to make sure that we're not building any more private prisons beds because of the safety issue, but also because of the expense issue. There's this myth out there that private prisons are cheaper than public prisons. They always say they're saving the state money. But that's simply not the case. And even the Department of Corrections' own study that just came out about 2 months ago shows that the private prisons are actually costing this state more money than public prisons are. And the reason why this is very simple. The reason why this is happening is because private prisons get to, so to speak, they cherry-pick their prisoners that they take in. They don't take in the high-risk prisoners. They don't take in the prisoners that have any health problems. And if their prisoners that they do take in develop health problems, they then push them back onto the state. They're taking the cheapest prisoners, and actually they're then providing them with some of the lowest security possible, very low staff-to-prisoner ratios, and they're jeopardizing the public. And it's a horrible idea. There is never been, at least in my knowledge, I haven't seen a single study out there from any state yet that shows private prisons save states money, unless, of course, the study's been backed by a private prison company. But I've seen no independent studies that show private prisons back or private prisons save states money. And as we saw last year, they're jeopardizing public safety, and it's time to put an end to this really horrible practice here in the state of Arizona.
What about other privatization efforts? I don't want to – you say all you want to about the prisons, but there's other state agencies that have been under pressure and have contracts out, and of course, and then there's education.
Yeah, you know, and again, it depends on the situation, depends on what you're talking about. Sometimes privatizing certain things does work better. There's no doubt about that. Privatizing some types of contractual, privatizing types of things with services, such as privatizing vendor services, some things like that, those sometimes save money, and they're much better and much more efficient than doing it publicly. It makes sense. But you also then privatize things like the Department of Revenue, and you're sending out the revenue collections to private companies. So that is a horrible idea, both for the security risk to individual taxpayers, as well as the fact that, it's not saving any money. It's a much less efficient way to do business. Each case has to be looked upon on an individual basis, and you have to evaluate whether or not it's going to save money or not save money, and whether or not it's going to provide an effective service or not.
All right, so not a good idea.
The problem down here, though, and I said this to you guys, before, the problem with this is you have people down here that are so steeped in ideology that they're not looking at the facts. They refuse to look at the facts, and they believe that privatizing is almost some type of religion, and that you have to privatize at the expense of everything else, and it's just going to work itself out. That's not true. The facts don't back that up, and we need people down here that are using common sense and actually studying the data and actually making tough decisions, and we don't have that right now.
Yeah, you really don't have that. And What is behind the Republican belief in it's really a belief system in privatization as a solution for almost everything? What can you do?
It's almost a, I mean, to some degrees, it's almost like a religious belief.
Well, let me clarify. So no to the Department of Corrections privatization, no to the Department of Revenue privatization. And what do you mean by vendors? Who's a vendor?
Well, I mean, there's certain things you can do to privatize things that save money. For instance, there's certain vendors within state parks that provide food services or things like that. It makes sense to privatize that. There's no reason to have that under public contract. It definitely saves the state money. And there's plenty of private companies out there that are much more experienced in providing food and such than the state is. There's been talk about privatizing some of the highway rest stops and some of the services there that we've had to close over the past several years. And looking at the data there, it seems to be a pretty good alternative to letting the state run this. It does seem like that could be a much more efficient way of doing it. So, again, you have to just look at things on a case-by-case basis, and you have to look at the data. And that's how you come up with good public policy, not just regurgitating the latest talking points you've received from whatever it is out there, the Heritage or the Heartland Institute, the Goldwater Institute, whatever it is. You need to actually do some research and figure it out, and that's what's not taking place down there.
It's great that you've been able to research these things, but when you talk to Republican legislators and you talk about the facts and you show we should privatize here, but the facts show we shouldn't privatize there because it doesn't make sense, what's their response? Is it
The response I get from the majority of the Republicans down here is that, you know, privatizing is always good. I think there are many people down here who see this financial crisis. They see this as an opportunity to decimate the public sector at all costs, no matter what the end result is. They have seen this as their shining golden opportunity to do that, and they're doing it to the fullest extent possible, be it public education, be it the correction system, be it whatever it is. They are going to try to gut the public sector to the fullest extent possible, and we've seen it time and time again for the past 3 years.
What about public education? It looks from up here in northern Arizona like they're deliberately trying to undercut public education, its funds, its local authority, everything. Are they really trying to decimate public education and replace it with something else?
I it's hard for me to speak to their motives. And I think you can't just say they as a group. They're, like I said, the Republicans are very diverse in their caucus, just like the Democrats are. And I think there's a lot of Republicans there that care about public education. Unfortunately, rather than talking about long-term economic solutions and long-term fiscal solutions for this state that could help us fund education, many people down here have taken the easy road, and they've just gutted everything. And the biggest victim of those cuts has been public education, without a doubt. And it's amazing to me that people don't think about what they're doing. And when they talk about reducing the size of government, when you're talking about education, what you're talking about is jeopardizing the future of our children of the state, and also talking about laying off thousands of hardworking teachers, putting them out on the street, forcing them to take unemployment, forcing them to go on welfare. It's a huge economic hit to the state. And then, again, it goes back to the fact that I believe, unfortunately, people aren't looking through a long-term lens down here. They're looking at the short-term, and they're being led by certain leaders within the majority party who do believe and who do want to cut education and gut public education, and that is their goal. And unfortunately, I think that has been the dominant conversation for the majority party for 3 straight years now.
Our people from up here, Andy Tobin and Karen Fan, and I don't necessarily want to have you talk out of school about your colleagues, but we're talking about their behavior. Do you see any hope in those two representatives?
I don't know Representative Fan very well. This was just her first year. I haven't had much time to work with her. We didn't serve in any committees together. And so I don't know her as well as I do Andy. Andy and I got elected at the same time, so we've been down here for the same length of time. And the Speaker and I get along very well, personally. I think Andy and I both get along very well, personally. I think he would say the same thing. But we disagree on a lot of things politically, unfortunately. I've talked to Speaker Tobin about some of the economic ideas we've had, some of the fiscal reform ideas we've had. And he's been receptive, and he's talked to me about some of his ideas. But unfortunately, we haven't seen any of that translated into actual legislation. And I'm hoping that that Mr. Tobin, in his new role as Speaker, will lead us in a different way next year, lead us to some long-term, common-sense types of economic discussions, as opposed to just the status quo, which has been cut, 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 and hand out more and more corporate tax breaks and special interest tax breaks down here. I'm hoping Mr. Tobin will get us away from that conversation, and we'll see next year when he takes over.
All right, you're an Arizona native. You graduated from Northern Arizona University, is that right?
Yep. Yes, I did.
When's the last time you drove through Paulden, Tobin's hometown?
I have not been to Paulden in quite some time. I spend a lot of time up in Northern Arizona, and Central Northern Arizona, if you call it that. I spend a lot of time everywhere up there. I'm a big outdoors person, but I have not been to Paulden in quite some time.
Well, you probably wouldn't recognize it. You were a prime sponsor on some really, really family-friendly bills and some bills that certainly I'm just going to read a short list. The Highway User Fund revenue uses, the Pediatric Early Childhood Literacy, House Bill 2705, Family Leave Insurance. What a great idea. House Bill 2670, increasing the dropout age. House Bill 2587, the In-Home Care Providers Study Committee. What can you say about some of these bills and what happened to them?
Well, I mean, you know, we've worked on a variety of bills down here in my 5 years that I've been here, and some have passed. I got several bills passed my first couple of years down here. Unfortunately, when I joined the leadership team, I became the minority whip in my second term, and as you guys mentioned, I'm serving as a leader now in my third term. When you become a leadership, your bills tend to not go as far in your minority party, shockingly enough. So I really haven't had much success in terms of my own bills. But I will say this. The Democrats, all of us, I think, offer a lot of good ideas down here. I have some brilliant bills from many of my colleagues. And unfortunately, in most cases, they just don't move anywhere. The majority party doesn't let many minority party bills get through. That is a symptom, of a broken system and extreme partisanship. And I would hope that at some point we can have a debate around the issues down here, not just the politics. And a great example of this actually was this last session. I introduced a bill this last session, which would have actually lowered the corporate tax rate in the state, corporate income tax rate, because I do believe it was too high. But I would have been closing some of the bad tax credits and some of the other bad programs we have out there to pay for that lowered corporate tax rate, as opposed to the Speaker's bill, which just lowered all the corporate tax rates and didn't pay for them and just threw away about $1 billion a year. My bill actually paid for the tax cuts and actually was a true tax reform bill as opposed to just a tax cut bill like the Speaker's bill. My bill actually, it got the endorsement of Bob Robb, who's a very conservative columnist in the Arizona Republic.
Yeah, yeah.
Even he said my bill was better than the Speaker's bill. Yeah, my bill never even got a hearing down here. And the reason for that was because, obviously, it was a Democratic bill. And that's unfortunate, I believe, when you have ideas that should be getting bipartisan support and they can't even get a hearing to have a discussion about these bills. And again, that's just a symptom, I think, of a very broken system down here.
Yeah, it seems when you're not in the legislature that's true. We listen to all the really and see all the really extreme bills that don't seem to have much to do with Arizona's situation. I mean, we have high unemployment. We need jobs.
Yep.
We need more people. We need to close some tax loopholes. Why will they never? And we have got about a minute left. Why won't Republicans support closing some of these tax loopholes? What's the story?
I don't know, but I will say this, and I've said this to you guys before as well. We need some political courage down here. We need people to start putting aside their own political futures, start worrying about the future of this state.
Okay.
Closing these tax loopholes, reforming the system, it's going to take courage, and we need that from the governor's office down to the legislature, from every single person involved in politics in this state.
All right.
Thank you, Chad, for being with us. We really appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you for doing good work down there.
And we hope we'll see you up in northern Arizona. I know you're coming up to speak to Dove. And we'd like to have you come up to speak to Dore in November, too. I'll send you an email.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Okay, thank you again.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.